I mean, first of all, thanks for choosing us over Lizzo.
This is all about to see what you can and can't do. And when you compete in our league, it'll tell you.
And welcome back to yet another edition of the 920 Podcast. I'm your host, Logan Quinton, joined by Bill Minot. It's already here, folks. We are on the way to Hoover, and so are the Vols, coming in as the number one seed in the SEC. The Vols ended up the season 46-10 overall, 22-8 in the conference, and they'll be going in a good spot. They don't have to start off on Tuesday like they did last year. They avoid that single elimination portion of the tournament. They'll be there for 2 days. We know that. And as we record here late on Wednesday night, we now know the opponent.
Today's Tuesday.
See, I'm already ahead of myself. Man, this week's been crazy. But yeah, the Vols will face Vandy. And this will be game seven, correct?
That would be correct, yes.
So game seven, going up against Vandy. That's what we know so far. Like I said, we also know that the Vols are champions coming out of the SEC. Like I said, the number one seed, they get that nod. And
wait, make sure I understand that. Who did you say was the number one seed and the champion?
That would be the Tennessee Volunteers.
Well, you know, that's really odd because all day Saturday we saw on Twitter the Kentucky baseball website, or excuse me, Twitter account, kept proclaiming they were the outright champions. Isn't it funny how things work out?
It is. And, you know, maybe that, you know, something can be said later in this tournament, but for now we'll see how things shake out
till that point late in the tournament. But in any event, of course, I was just joking kind of halfway, but you know, what a great conference race it was. And, you know, Kentucky jumped out like they were going to run away with it. And Tennessee kept prodding. And then you had Arkansas in the West in there. And, you know, in the end, Tennessee closed so well. Kentucky sputtered a little bit down the stretch. And Tennessee just closed so very well and ended up with that number one seed and officially the co-championship of the SEC. So what can you say about the job this Tennessee team did, especially late in the season?
Yeah, and Tennessee, Kentucky, as good a shape as any in this tournament, obviously. And we'll talk about some other teams in the rest of the tournament later on, but now we'll get right into it, Bill, the Hot Works Hot Hand segment of this show. And we got to give it, let's take a regular season kind of look back at this, at Christian Moore. It's been amazing to watch him transcend into, all of a sudden, he late in the season, he became in the conversation for SEC Player of the Year. And he had a lot of work to do over the weekend. And he put that in 3 home runs on 7 hits over the weekend against South Carolina to cap things off. And he got the triple crown in SEC play, but did tie in the RBI category with Charlie Condon, who was eventually voted on as the SEC Player of the Year. But Christian Moore, what a performance by him over the weekend and the course of the whole season. He got better in conference play. And we touched on that the last podcast that, you know, what he's done in the SEC and will he be kind of in the conversation? And then he rolls into the weekend, last regular season series, SEC series of the year against the Gamecocks as the Vols took care of South Carolina.
You know, all year long we heard who's the SEC Player of the Year. Is it Jack Cagley? Leon, is it Charlie Condon? Yeah, all the time, all the while, Simo just kept being steady guy, just having a great year. You know, if you can have a win the SEC Triple Crown and stay under the radar, that was Simo this year. But yeah, just a terrific year for Simo. And you know, and yeah, he did the power number. What's incredible to me, the power numbers came hitting in the leadoff spot. That's just almost unheard of in college baseball to have that kind of power numbers from the leadoff spot.
Yeah, and there was a stretch there in the season, actually a couple of them. He went twice. He went 4 games without driving in a run. And there was at one point, I think we even talked about it on one of the podcasts early on, that, you know, the numbers were looking good, but he's just not driving in many runs because of the leadoff spot. And boy, did that change.
in the, I believe, with the Kentucky series, he wasn't getting a lot of guys on base in front of him. And, you know, his power stroke kind of died a little bit for the first couple of games of that series anyway. But then he had made the adjustments and, you know, he started hitting the ball back up the middle. And before you knew it, he had five, six singles in like seven at bats, you know. So he adjusted to what he was being given, what he needed to do for his team. You know, that's just kind of hitter he is, you know, he can beat you with a long ball. He can beat you going back up the middle. No, he's just not official yet, but he's just a professional hitter. And you know, that's the reason, one of the reasons I think he has an excellent chance of becoming a Major League Baseball player is because he has the ability to adjust and beat you in several different ways.
Yeah, and looking back at it, you know, as we previewed the season, we were kind of wanting to learn more about this team. It wasn't set in stone for him to be the leadoff spot. You know, there was
I had him in third, you know.
We certainly felt like he was in the conversation and would be like a likely pick for that. But from the get-go, he grabbed a hold of that leadoff spot and ran with it and has been fantastic. And, you know, it's been so impressive. And I got a chance to ask Simo in one of the post-game pressers over the weekend against South Carolina, is it your approach that, you know, matched with being in that leadoff spot? Is that what makes the difference? And he said, oh, without a doubt, you know, with his mindset and his approach at the plate, that's the spot he wants to be in. He said he wants to set the tone for this lineup, and that's what he's done. And it's got to be such a high pressure situation for a pitcher to go up against a guy like Simo and knowing who's coming behind, you know, and Blake Burke and Billy Amick. And, you know, there's 5-6 guys coming in behind him that it's just, man, that's got to be tough.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's with the Tennessee lineup, there's just, you can't pitch around anybody. You just can't, or you're going to get burned. And we saw it so many times this year. If a walk, a hit batsman, something out of the ordinary, and you know, next batter or the batter following, the pitcher paid for it. You know, and that's one of the really the main thing from my viewpoint, the main thing that made this Tennessee offense so good. They just didn't miss mistakes very often. Pitcher made a mistake, they paid for it with this Tennessee from this Tennessee offense. So that was what made this offense so potent, in my opinion, was they didn't miss mistakes at all.
And, you know, there was obviously, like we touched on, a lot of talk last weekend about Simo being in the conversation for SEC Player of the Year. There's also starting to be a conversation about, is this guy a first rounder now? And at Baseball Prospect Journal, we definitely have him as a top 40 prospect. And it's just a matter of how things could shake out at the back end of the first round. And just in talking with people in the industry, it's a real thing now. And that says a lot. Just because Simo, being a second baseman who hasn't played a lot at shortstop, he definitely has the projection to play like a corner outfield, particularly left. He has the athleticism to do that. But even for a guy that hits pretty good and has pretty good power, you know, you have to flash the ability to play multiple positions and things like that when they're looking at first round material. So the fact that he's kind of the way he's impacted the baseball this season and doing it from the leadoff spot has been impressive. And that's what's putting him in a legitimate conversation to be a first rounder. So I thought that was really impressive as well.
Yeah. And I certainly see him going. I think he's played himself into a, you know, no later than the competitive balance picks at the end of the first round. So, which would put him in the mid-30s, which that's where I see him at this point. You know, who knows? He may come out and just have a terrific regional and super regional, hopefully World Series, and, you know, play himself up any higher. But I think at this point, he's no worse than a competitive balance pick.
Yeah, I agree. And it's the way he's, like I said, impacting the baseball. It's not just at home. Some of his, the surface stats are amazing to look at, but also some of the stuff he is doing, he's doing it better on the road outside of Lindsey Nelson Stadium. So it's
right. And not only that, but he has a swing that's going to translate well to the wood bat, in my opinion. You know, some hitters don't, you know, but I think Simo has one of them. And I think Dylan Dreiland has one of those swings as well.
Yep.
That's going to transfer, that's going to be just as potent with a wood bat in his hands as it is with an aluminum bat. So, you know, that going from wood to aluminum, that's been the end of a lot of great college hitters. But that's the key. If you can make yourself go to that wood bat, you'll be in good shape. And I think Simo's has that type of swing to be able to do that.
Everything we're seeing from him right now is when he's putting it on the ball, it's either up the middle or over the fence. So he's pretty locked in right now. Let's hope that it keeps up.
Yep.
And he's got a great supporting cast. Like we mentioned, there's been the SEC, you know, selections have come down and the Vols, you know, Simo is first team all SEC along with Dylan Dreiling, Kavars Tears and Blake Burke, second team all SEC, and even had a freshman in Dean Curley on the all freshman team. And by the way, Tears was on the all defensive team as well.
Great representation for Tennessee. Yeah.
Tremendous campaign for the team, and especially Simo, who might end up being a first rounder after all. So they've been locked in. They've been hot. Let's see if they keep it going. Folks, if you want to change up your routine and your daily life to get on a hot streak, there's no better place to do it than Hot Works. They've got the infrared saunas to go along with enough room to work out in the FX zone. They've got hot cycling, hot yoga. Not only do you get a reward physically and mentally with the detoxification, they offer rewards as well. You know, the more you go, the more rewards you get, and you can put that towards your monthly enrollment fees. You can put it through the retail. They all have retail shops there at Hot Works. So be sure to check it out. And I have confirmed they do have one in Hoover for folks going down there to Hoover who might want to take a break or hit up early morning exercise routine before heading over to the Met. Speaking of heading to the Hoover Met, let's talk about this SEC tournament, Bill. Man, it's going to be really interesting. We talked about it off air before we started recording that, you know, you got a lot of SEC teams that are, you know, vying for a spot in the tournament and seeding and all that. SEC might get a record-breaking 11 teams in the NCAA tournament. You had, what, five teams stuck at 13 wins coming in?
Yeah, five teams. Yeah.
So, the three things that needed to happen to get a shot at having 11 teams in all happened so far today up to this point. So you had South Carolina win. You had Vanderbilt win and LSU. LSU right. beat Georgia.
Right.
So it's already off to a wacky start. All the underseeds have won. We've got Mississippi State and Ole Miss right now. Ole Miss pretty much would have to make it to the semifinals, I would think, or even the championship
right.
To have a shot. So kind of what sticks out to you maybe, you know, for the whole tournament or maybe a narrative for the Vols or, you know, what sticks out to you for this trip to Hoover?
Well, just like you said, it's really it's kind of a wacky kind of situation. And there's some teams really needing the wins to get in. And so far we've seen them getting those wins that they need. You know, I'm just anxious to see how Tennessee, Kentucky, and Arkansas are going to play this tournament. You know, because, you know, it's bottom line is, and Texas A&M as well, you know, bottom line, those four teams are already, they're going to be national seeds no matter what happens. They're going to be top eights no matter what happens. You know, they're at home for a regional, super regional if they get there. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play it. And when I say that, how they lay out their pitching staff, how many pitches they give their frontline pitchers, and, you know, to see how bad they really want to be there and stay the whole weekend. Because, you know, a team in that situation, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, sometimes you're better off going home after a couple of days and giving your arms some rest and acclimating, yeah. getting ready for the regional. So to me, that's going to be the interesting part. You know, the top four seeds, how are they going to play the tournament? Now, the second part of it is, as you mentioned, those teams sitting on 13, how many of those are going to get to 15, maybe 16, and have a chance to not only get in the tournament, but to play up in seeding as well. So, you know, I fully expect LSU to have a good tournament. I think they're going to win at least another game, if not a couple more, and put themselves in really good shape. South Carolina took a big step today. And, you know, after, you know, the way they closed, they really need to perform well in this tournament. So, you know, there's still some questions to be answered. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking at. I wouldn't be surprised to see anything happen at Hoover. The one thing I am surprised, no rain today, which is very unusual for an SEC tournament first day. So that's the silver lining, pun intended.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx anything, but this week the weather in Hoover looks pretty good in that department as far as avoiding rain. I think up in this region, I think we're catching all the rain towards the end of the weekend, the way the forecast looks. Right. But Hoover looks to be hot and full of sunshine. So we'll see how that works out. But yeah, with some of these teams, like I mentioned, Vandy, LSU, they came in, you know, kind of the most desperate, you know, in terms of looking at their RPI. Vandy was sitting there at 26. You want to stay in the top 30. Yeah. So a loss, Vanderbilt taking a loss to Florida would have been pretty monumental for them. And then LSU sitting right at 30 coming in. They got the job done against Georgia. And I agree with you, Bill, on LSU. I really feel like they're a team that can go on a run in Hoover and really the tournament, the NCAA tournament overall. We're starting to see a little bit of uptick in the pitching department, which we knew they had the guys and talented arms. And I don't think either one of us is real crazy about the lineup, but when you have firepower, and Tommy White and Jared Jones, if a couple of other bats get hot, like we saw today with Pearson, you know, Pearson had a big day today. If they get that and Tommy White is going to be Tommy White and you see optimal pitching from that LSU staff, I like their chances in the postseason.
No, absolutely, I do. And you know, the other part of that is, you know, they're still the defending champions, and with quite a few guys that were on that championship team. So, but they understand when it comes tournament time, it's time to turn it up. And they play just a little bit better, it seems. And you know, LSU always has some kind of magic in Hoover. You know, so this is their time of the year, if you will.
Yeah, and Alabama. They dropped one to South Carolina. They got off to a really good start, but South Carolina prevailed in that one, and it's one and done for Bama. But I think, you know, they were sitting in a good spot. They were 18 in RPI. Right. They have the 13 conference wins, just 33 wins overall, 33 and 22 now. I think they're still pretty safe to get in.
They certainly cost themselves probably at least one seeding spot, but. You know, I agree with you. I think Alabama is going to be a tournament team.
The interesting one will be Florida. They will finish one game above 500 overall. But they had a better RPI than LSU, South Carolina, and Vandy. So at 22 in the RPI coming in. So they may drop to like 24, 25 in the RPI, which still seems really safe if you're going by that metric. So. Bill, it's looking like I think they get to that 11. I really do.
I would think so. And like you and I talked before we began recording, they've also got another factor named Jack Caglione.
Yeah.
That the tournament committee is going to want to see in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, if they're on a bubble, if you will, I think he certainly has the star power to be able to maybe nudge him a little bit over the line and into the tournament. So I think Florida's. I agree with you. I think Florida's got a good shot to get in. I would put a better than 50-50 shot, obviously, to get there.
Yeah, and one of the games going on right now, Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Mississippi State has something to play for because if they have a really good showing in Hoover, I think they could get to that host spot. They really – that Missouri loss to cap the weekend really hurt them. Like, if they win that game, they're probably in hosting position now. You know, and so they're coming in as a projected 2 seed. What can they do? Can they, you know, we'll see what they do tonight, but they could be one and done. But like if they
currently trail Ole Miss 1-0 in the top of the 6th. So they've got some work to do.
And how fitting is it to start out with Ole Miss, a team that's fighting for their lives and their rival, one of the hottest rivalries in all of sports that I think is often overlooked.
Absolutely it is. And of course, this is an Ole Miss team. We remember what they did just a few short years ago. They had to fight their way into the tournament, ended up winning a national championship. So, you know, there's some memories. Nobody left on that team, I don't think, but there's some memories of folks around Ole Miss that remember that one too. So they're hoping lightning can strike twice, if you will.
We're going to have some new bases in Hoover. How do you feel about that, Bill?
Well, how do I feel? Okay, so my grandson, who's now 10 years old, when he played T-ball when he was 4 or 5, they had those double bases, and it was ridiculous because the kids, they always hit the inside base. They never ran to the outside part of it anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't see the point of doing it, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, I understand. I heard somebody on the SEC Network today try to say, well, it's you know, you got to run the outside lane, so it's they're going to put a base out there. Well, why haven't they ever done that before? How long has baseball been played? And there's never been a base outside a double base there. It hasn't been necessary before. And, you know, from my standpoint, I think it could make the make it a little more difficult for the umpires. Because, you know, you got to watch, you got to listen.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you've got a first baseman on the far inside and a runner hit the far back outside, how well can the umpire really see that? It's tough enough now to see what simultaneous hitting the glove and the base as it is. You know, you take two more feet away or move the corner where the runner hits two more feet out, that's going to be tougher for the umpires too. So, yeah, you know, I don't see the point, but I guess that's just me. Or it's not me, because I've heard a lot of other people, you know, have this, basically the same opinion. But, you know, I just – the SEC tournament's not the time to start experimenting with things. If you're going to do it early in the year.
Yeah, and it's been an option for the past couple of seasons. I think A&M, and I want to say Vandy, has been a part of the games, maybe some midweek games where they mixed it in. I don't know. I understand, like you said, I understand, like, you know, the safety issue or whatever of getting runners out to the outside lane. But then you have the factor of, you know, if the runner is going to make a turn in the infield, you know, he has to go back to the white bag. You know, you have errant throws and all this stuff. I just trying too hard at the wrong thing, I guess. Yeah. I'm with you, man. I think it's a bad idea to start it in this SEC tournament or to begin it with it, period.
I come from the school of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
It ain't broke. Doesn't need to be fixed.
Yeah, just because you get a couple of run lane violations or what have you per season, per conference or whatever, like it's – I mean, it's baseball, there's got to be room for judgment and not just, you know, making an adjustment to a game that's old as time, you know, that might not need to be messed with. So
no, and especially now with the with video review, you can get the call right already. You don't need to gimmick things up.
I'm with you on that. We agree on that. You know, we also kind of agree on LSU being a team to watch in this tournament. The Vols will have to key on Vandy. Hasn't been long at all. It's just been a little over a week since the Vols left Hawkins Field with a series win. And so this not too far removed from that matchup. As we're going into this and looking at Vandy, they want to lock up their berth in the big tournament. And as far as the way these teams will line up, we don't quite know what the pitching situation will be for either team at this time. But as we look at the weekend rotation presented by Crumble Cookies, we can kind of start to dissect what Tennessee will do. I think there's some suspects here that, you know, we can kind of count on to see early. I know that we've been expecting to see AJ Russell, you know, the past couple of weekends as a possibility. Tony V has pretty much said, yeah, it's in the plans for, you know, early in the tournament, Wednesday or Thursday. I also think that, you know, maybe a guy like if they want to open with a guy like Dylan Loy, just as an opener or something like that, maybe that's in the mix. I could see a guy like Xander Sechrist starting Wednesday or Thursday, even Chris Tamos could open. You could plan to open with him a couple of times over the course of the tournament or something. So what kind of what are your thoughts? What would you like to see?
You mentioned Dylan Loy. I don't think it's any accident that we saw Dylan Loy in SEC play the last couple of weekends.
Yeah. You know,
obviously, we've talked about the pitching staff needing somebody from that young group to separate themselves, if you will, and be ready to pitch. And I think Dylan Loy's become that guy, and he's probably that wild card. And like you said, I think he would have an opportunity to either open or contribute in an important time during the game. So there's a lot of things that can be done. I think Tony does what he needs to try to get the win over Vandy, because that's a big win. That's a big game. So you don't want to give Vandy a win streak over you and be able to take that on the road recruiting with them in state. So I think that Vanderbilt game, that opener tomorrow, that's going to be a big game. So, you know, I don't know exactly how we're going to play it, but, you know, I think however Tony and Frank decide to play it, they're definitely going to play that game to win that game, because that's one. You need to get that first one, and especially because it's Vanderbilt.
I think if they want the most control of the situation in terms of AJ Russell, you would want to open with him the first game.
Right.
That way you don't have to worry about him getting burned in the pen or like, which I don't think they'll, you know, if we don't see AJ open, I think he'll be the first to come out of the pen likely. So you just don't want him if he's on a pretty strict and low pitch count, which we don't know what the pitch count would be.
Right. But it'll be controlled for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You just don't want a situation to happen where he's getting hot and then kind of has to rear back a little bit.
Right.
And then get hot again. So I don't know how much of that is a factor, but at least an inning or two out of Russell, I think will provide a lot of fans. And also the team with a lot of comfort and just being at, we've been talking about it for a long time. So it'd be nice to get out there and see him get some outs and eat an inning or two against SEC competition. Right. Also, a big factor is Nate Snead. And, you know, that doesn't change. He's an X factor every weekend just because the way you can utilize him, you know, when do we see him? Because I think we will definitely see him Wednesday or Thursday. And he's a guy that could go twice over the course or more. We may see, you know, a few appearances, knowing the way that.
Right. Depending on how many pitches he throws in the first couple of appearances.
I don't know. Those names right there, though, AJ Russell, Dylan Lloyd, Nate Snead, Xander Seacrest, Chris Stamos, I think we'll see all of those names likely in the first two games. Mm-hmm. And if you can pick up two wins right off the bat, you get that break on Friday. And if you find yourself on Saturday not using AJ Causey or Drew Beam, you put yourself in a really good spot.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. 100%. And you know, it's like we said before, it's going to be just really interesting to see how Tony and Frank decide to play it and what moves they decide to make. So very, very anxious to see that.
As far as Vanderbilt, I don't know if we talked about it. I don't know if we see J.D. Thompson this early, talking about the first game, you know, the matchup with Tennessee. He threw 109 pitches on Saturday, but Devin Fetrell came in and threw about 61 in relief that day. And I wonder if I definitely think he's an option to throw. I just don't know if he starts. They may try to piece together somewhat of a bullpen game because they do have a number of arms that they like to go to. But he's, for fans that the name may sound familiar, he's the last pitcher that Tennessee faced on that Sunday. Was that a Sunday game? That was the Sunday game. So the bats were pressing at that point. J.D. Thompson was really good against Tennessee. And then Futrell comes in from the left side and utilizing his changeup and using the outer half. And, you know, it was a tough spot for a team that, No one else on the team other than Dylan Dreiling had a hit that day. So it was a really tough spot for him late in that game. I would like to see Tennessee get a full run at him and see how different it is this time around. But that would be my expectation. Maybe Futrell starting, or maybe they go with another guy and then bring Futrell in. He is used to pitching midweek, by the way, in terms of like timing of the week and everything like that. He's no stranger to that, and he's a really talented pitcher for Vandy. So I like the matchup as a whole. I think that, you know, Vandy's lineup does not scare me. I'm not crazy about their lineup. I would much rather face this Vandy lineup than, say, a hot Florida team, you know, that had a good weekend against Georgia, scored a lot of runs. Obviously, that came to an end on the first day, but yeah, I like the matchup. Like you said, you get that rivalry. You're on a run against Vandy, and so the last time you faced them, you got blanked. So I really like that narrative coming in. You know, like hungry and wanting to win a couple of games in Hoover, and just it's a rivalry game. It's Hoover. These teams, like Jim Schlossnagel, I heard him talking about it. They know they're in good position, but they're coming here to compete. And, you know, yeah, in the back of their minds, they're going to caution towards being conservative and rest and all of that. But at the same time, like Tennessee, very talented team with a lot of guys they've had contribute throughout the year. They've got guys they can call on in the lineup or in the pen that make them feel comfortable and confident. So you can kind of balance that competitiveness and the rest together, especially for the first couple of days.
Yeah. One of the thoughts you had asked me my thoughts earlier on what's happened so far today. And the other thing, yeah, a little bit surprised how the ball's flying today. Now, Hoover's a big ballpark. Normally don't see a ton of home runs hit in the SEC tournament, but South Carolina alone, I think, had four today, if not five. I believe it was four. But now the ball's been flying pretty good today. So, you know, if the weather stays warm, you know, and stays hot and we don't see a lot of, a lot of rain and humidity, this could be an interesting tournament as far as long balls, as far as home runs being hit, because there is a lot of power in the SEC this year. A lot of every team has several guys capable of taking the ball deep. So we could see a potentially record home runs in Hoover this year.
Yeah, it's going to be hot. Going to be sunny and hot down there. And I agree. And that's even with, the first day or two, you'll see that bullpen changing a lot. You'll see a bunch of different arms. And in a lot of cases, that keeps the runs down because you're mixing and matching so much. And but I agree with you. I kind of expect things to open up as the weekend goes along, the longer we get in the weekend. I really do. We mentioned, one of our other sponsors, Hotworks, is in Hoover. Crumble, also in Hoover, in the Vestavia Hills area. So, folks, if you're going down there, be sure to check out Crumble. It's a short drive from Hoover. Nice area, by the way. We don't know what some of these lineups and rotations are going to look like, but we know what it looks like for Crumble this week. And, Bill, I kind of underestimated this lineup a little bit. I looked at it on Sunday night when the menu dropped. And when I went to do a pickup today, it kind of hit me. We got the sugar cookie featuring the mother circus animal. Their sugar cookies are amazing. We got a peach cobbler, got a confetti cake. My favorite is the skillet cookie. This is, it's basically a chocolate chip cookie topped with a scoop of vanilla bean frosting on top and a drizzle of semi-sweet chocolate.
Interesting. You sold me. I'll take them.
Yeah, you mentioned it's going to be hot in Hoover. This skillet cookie is like it's fresh off the press, man. Just coming off the skillet and into your mouth. They also got a cookies and cream crispy bar, kind of a rice twist with a rice crispy, flair to it. And the always reliable milk chocolate chip. So, folks, go check them out. We love our sponsors. What makes this thing go? Hotworks and Crumble have been amazing. It's no coincidence that they're both in Hoover, in and around Hoover. So go check them out if you're down there, Crumble and Hotworks. Bill, as we start to head out, I got a couple of key guys that I think could make a difference either in Hoover or going forward in the postseason.
All right.
I just want to point out Hunter Ensley's performance over the weekend where he had six walks and he had three in one game. We saw a little bit of a lineup change, they're moving him up and then Tears back at the six hole seemed to really do wonders for Ensley and really the lineup in general. What are your thoughts on that lineup? Do you think it sticks? Do you think we see something else maybe at the DH spot?
As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we were talking about the bases, it's if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, Ensley's gotten hot again. He started out the season kind of so-so and then he got hot and then so-so again, but he's gotten hot again at the right time of the year. So his bat needs to be in there. And, I like moving him up in the lineup. And not only that, but it gives you another long ball threat down further in the lineup when you can move Tears on down in the lineup. So, that's the thing with this Tennessee lineup. It really doesn't matter who's hitting in what slot, other than, you want your top three, four guys to stay consistent. But after that, there's really doesn't matter who's hitting where, because you've got a potential really good bat on deck at any point. So it's Tony's a smart guy. He and Josh are when they set their lineup, they know what they're doing with it. They know who's hot. They see the guys in batting practice and see how their middle approach is. So they've done a good job, I think, in adjusting this lineup here late in the year.
Yeah, and also maybe we see Dalton Bargo or Cannon Peebles really start to flourish. We're kind of waiting on that. They're good. The lineup's good either way, but that DH spot you know, kind of waiting to see if a guy will emerge. And a lot of times you will see in tournament play when kind of the things ramp up and guys kick it to an extra gear. I think one of those guys are cut out for the moment in Hoover or otherwise. So, you know, with Peebles being a switch hitter, you know, to pinch hit or to DH, and then also Bargo as well. You know, he's been in the SEC before coming over to Tennessee. He was at Missouri.
Right.
There's something about him, Bill. I just have like a gut feeling about him being, whether it's postseason or going forward in the program, I feel like he can contribute in a big way. I wonder if one of those guys has a moment this week.
Yeah, I'd just like to see somebody be put in that role and stay for a few games in a row. Give them a chance to get some rhythm, because, you know, I think that's been some of the issue. And, you know, we don't know all the reasoning behind, the thought behind, you know, changing the DH as much as I have. But I'd like to see somebody get a shot, get put in that DH role, and know they're going to be there for several games in a row, you know, and see if that, you know, if they can relax a little bit and, you know, maybe put some better swings on the ball. You mentioned Peebles. Obviously, him being a switch hitter, he's a prime candidate for that. So, you know, He's a much better hitter than we've seen. I don't know what's going on with him.
Oh, yeah.
But we know from his success he had last year at NC State that he's a much better hitter than we've seen thus far. So I just want to see somebody in that role get a chance to get comfortable in that role, have a chance to produce.
Hopefully we see it this week. That would be huge going forward for the Vols. If they figure out, like you said, a piece of the – you know, if they see something from a guy and say, hey – look, we're going to just stick with this. And maybe they can ride that spot for a while because they know that they've got some depth there with the bats.
Yeah.
Man, that would be huge.
Yeah.
Well, I'll leave with this, Bill. So we started at the top with an all SEC type of theme, talking about the all SEC awards and Christian Moore. Tennessee in conference games finished second in the league in batting average at .295. They were first in slugging and second in home runs, hit 72 homers in conference play.
Wow.
Then you factor in the pitching side of things. Causey racked up 7 wins in the SEC, which was tied for first. He tied with Hagen Smith and then Colton Smith. Drew Beam, 5 wins in the SEC. Nate Snead, 4 wins. And that's coming out of that, you know, being that that piece in the bullpen that you're going to use to shut the door or to, you know, go long relief. 4 wins for Snead. And then Tennessee, 10 saves in the SEC, which was tied for second. So looking back, Bill, the fact that you won 9 conference series, you know, out of 10, 9 in a row to end the year, and, the, you know, being down A.J. Russell and everything like that, man, just looking back at some of these stats and what they've done in conference play, like I said, 22 wins in conference on the year. We were sitting back probably month and a half ago talking, hey, if this team gets 17, 18 wins, good season.
Yep.
Keep fighting. That's not to say we didn't think the ceiling could be 20 plus, but I never would have guessed 22. You know, we knew it was kind of in there, but like to see them bust through and just make it through their gut, especially in this year's SEC, this day and age in the SEC, league of its own, for Tennessee to put together this resume, it's been quite impressive.
Absolutely incredible. And, you know, like I said, back when, you know, Kentucky got off to such a great start and it just looked like they were going to run away with everything. And, you know, this Tennessee team didn't panic. You know, they just kept playing baseball like they're capable of playing baseball and made the run. You know, kind of figured Kentucky might come back a little bit. But I never thought that Tennessee would have a chance to catch Kentucky as well as Kentucky was playing. And boy, they surprised me. Not that I didn't think they were not going to do well enough, you know, to finish high, but I never saw them catching Kentucky the way Kentucky was playing. So hats off to Tennessee for not quitting, not giving up on the opportunity to get to the number of wins they needed to win an SEC championship. And they just found a way to do it, close the season so well. You know, I have full disclosure, I have to admit, I didn't see one pitch of the South Carolina series. My grandson was playing in a tournament that went Thursday to Monday, so, and his games coincided with Tennessee, so I didn't get to see any of it. I just heard a few innings of from John Wilkerson on the radio broadcast, but yeah, you know, I didn't get to see any of it. But to close, you know, sweeping South Carolina was an incredible weekend after they had taken 4-6 from Florida and then Georgia. So hats off the way they closed and kept competing and battling all the way to the end of the season, and you know, it paid off with the SEC championship.
Best overall record in the conference, 46-10. We'll see what they can build on. We're in Hoover now. Like you said, anything can happen. The weather shouldn't be a factor, at least for the first few days. I think it'll be good all week. We'll see how good these boys are as they ramp things up with Vanderbilt in game 7 of the tournament. If they win, they will be the nightcap on Thursday night. We'll see how it shakes out. I can't wait. I will be down there Friday night. And so if we got any fans, any Tennessee fans, any Fan Run fans down there, be on the lookout. Definitely hit up Crumble or Hot Works, whatever you fancy there in that regard. Both closely located to the Hoover Met. For now, he's Bill Monnett. I'm Logan Quinton. This is the 920 Podcast. We will see you on the other side of Hoover. Are you struggling trying to find the right approach to a healthy lifestyle? HotWorks has all the tools you need. The infrared saunas provide many different ways for you to experience a fresh start. Join us at HotWorks today for the Summer Body Series. It's as simple as walking through the door at 10839 Hardin Valley Road. Enroll today for just $20 with the no prorated Fan Run family discount. Just call 865-297-3668. And don't forget to ask about teacher, student, and military benefits.